Hello, everybody. Welcome to Friday Filibuster. It's been a couple weeks, but I don't know if you've noticed or not. Please don't answer that question and depress me further. This is Dave Johnson, joined by, who's with us? Daryl, are you here, right?
I'm with you, I think.
That's good. And Jason's around here somewhere?
Yeah, I'm here somewhere.
And you got Eric.
Yep, that's me.
So four of us, and Jason's in a thunderstorm. So that's kind of the lay of the land, and you know how it goes. We're going to kill some time and kill some more time. So let's start with the time killing. We don't know how long we have Jason until, I don't know. What was it referred to in Twister? The F5, the finger of God, right? Is that what it is?
I believe so.
Is that actual, like, did they actually name their tornadoes after hotkeys on my keyboard?
Yes, F5 is top tornado.
F5 is top tornado. Good. And it's page refresh, so you're chilling.
Exactly.
So, all right. So before we lose Jason to the elements, why don't you go first and just update us on whatever it is you've been consuming your time with.
Well, it's been a few weeks since I've been with you guys, too. So let's see. I caught the new X-Men movie, Days of Future Past, in the theater a couple weeks ago, and I think you guys discussed this before, but I liked it a fair bit. Bryan Singer, I think he always does a really good job with the action scenes, but yeah, it was a good movie, and it's one I found out, too, the more I thought about it, the more I started unraveling some of the time travel stuff, so I just stopped thinking about that aspect of it and just enjoyed it.
Is there any time travel movie anyone could think of that doesn't unravel when you really think about it hard enough?
Yeah, well, maybe not, but I think the one that maybe doesn't unravel, but it drives you crazy is Shane Carruth's first movie, Primer, however you want to say that. That I think if you actually watch it enough times, the time travel stuff makes sense. But it also commits you to an insane asylum.
Gotcha.
So, yeah, there we go. Go ahead.
Oh, no. So Singer did the first two X-Men movies, right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So is there, because I haven't seen it. I haven't seen any since the third one. Is there any commonality between those first two and this one?
Yeah, it actually, it ties together the first three, and it also ties in, well, it ties in all the X-Men movies. It ties in First Class as well. And I guess it ties in the Wolverine movies, too. But, yeah, there's a through line through all of them. And I think it does a good job of actually involving all of the previous X-Men movies.
Mm-hmm. Good.
Yeah. So, yeah, it's pretty good. On another front, I realize it's been maybe 15 years since I watched the original Star Wars movies. And as a kid, I was a big fan, obsessively so, and then...
I'm so in your boat, man.
Yeah, I mean, this is a common story, I'm sure for a lot of people, but I realized that you can't really watch the unadulterated versions. I mean, those aren't even really available on DVD or anything, are they? The one, like, the pre-special edition versions.
It's only from Europe, probably, or
yeah, okay.
Taiwan,
figures.
But yeah, you're not going to find
it. I feel like there was some sort of, like, special edition that came with, like, flipper discs that had them at some point, but...
Oh, okay. Well, that's good to know. But anyway, I dusted off the old VHS copies and fired those up, and they're great. They're really good. And then I thought, hey, I'm going to watch the special versions. And I only caught the first two in the theater and never saw Return of the Jedi, and I watched that. And most of the stuff, you know, not that bad, but there's one thing that I didn't realize that they added that is just so bad. It's in the Jabba's Palace, the song number, they completely change.
Yeah, that's right. That was weird. Right. I don't know why.
And I don't know, it's I would put it up there with being as bad as pretty much anything in any of the prequel movies. That, like, 2-minute song just really killed any enjoyment that I had in the, well, at least in that special edition.
Maybe the Max Rebo band filed the trademark grievance, like a copyright complaint, you know, like...
Right.
Oh, maybe.
Did you know that the Max Rebo band for Google...
Oh, yeah, that's the original, because I think... they added in the new singer And the new version is just like this CGI monstrosity.
It's amazing how Google knows how much of a nerd I am. I just typed banned Java, and I got it. Max Rubo banned.
That's pretty good. That's pretty good. He must have filed a Digital Millennium Falcon rights claim.
That's right. That's right. With the Empire, the Imperial.
And Digital Copyright. I can't remember that. Anyway, yes.
DRM type of thing.
Come on.
To wrap this up, though, the on a video game front.
Really want to wrap this conversation up? Because I thought it was going places. Keep going.
Really? Okay.
No, keep going, please.
I started playing there's a sci-fi show on the Sci-Fi Channel called Defiance, and they were marketing it as this show that has a tie-in to a video game. This game, Defiance, it was a tie-in with a sci-fi show, and so I downloaded the game. It went free-to-play on computers about a month ago, and it's a lot of fun. Just nonstop violence. The plot line, it's kind of like typical sci-fi, find the MacGuffin kind of thing, but so far so good. Graphics look pretty good. I don't know if it's going to hold my interest for the long run, but at least based on a week of play, I give it a hearty thumbs up.
Is it an MMO?
Yeah, it's an MMO.
Okay, I was never clear about that. I had seen some notices about the game and show tie and stuff, but I guess I didn't realize it was an MMO. And apparently, my impression is that they were going to, assuming that the show and the game had legs, they were going to sort of bring characters from the game into the show and then vice versa.
And I think they actually have done that. I know the show got renewed for a second season. I think it's actually starting up this week or next week, maybe. And the game's doing, from what I've read, the game's doing okay. It's not like, you know, Money Pit or anything like that. But
man, whatever happened to Money Pit, the video game?
Oh, that's, I think there's, you can only get that in Japan, I think.
But. The day I get to,
I'm Shelley Long.
The day I get to play Shelley Long is when I will know that I fulfilled all.
Oh, awesome.
Is the Money Pit game be awesome? I'm not sure. Does Tom Hanks, like, go on for a wheelbarrow ride or something down a hill in that game? Or?
Yeah, I think probably, and Shelley Long leaves him there.
That could be like the Battletoads jet ski sequence.
Like, you got to imagine it's sort of like Minecraft, but the reverse. So the more work you put into it, the worse your house looks.
Yes, that's good. That's a good part, yeah.
All right.
Money Pit MMO. Fantastic. All right, go ahead, Darryl. You're on a roll. What do you got?
Well, not a whole lot, per se, but I was curious. So I finally got myself caught up on Game of Thrones up till to watch the season 4 finale. And you watch it, right, Dave?
I've not read any of the
Eric
books,
and Jason,
so
I
am book free.
I'm book free as well.
I've watched the first two full seasons of the show, and I've seen – no, what am I saying? I've watched the first three, and I've watched a little bit here and there of the fourth season.
Okay. Eric?
Yeah, I'm caught up.
Okay. So I'm just curious about – before I say my own impression, I'm curious about, for the two people who have seen it, spoiler-free impression of the finale.
Seemed to have a lot – as far as finale goes, it did a lot more than the other ones have. Like, the other seasons kind of ended with, like, table setting and little knot tying and setting up the next season. This one had more, at least, you know, more things going on, but kind of laid bare a few storylines that I've just kind of lost interest in. But that just seem to be kind of flatlining. So, like, you know, the Daenerys storm, you know, the Khaleesi stuff just didn't seem to really grab me as much. I don't know. It was, you know, obviously the big one was the death of a certain character. So that, you know, that was pretty cool. But I attribute that a lot to just the awesome actors that played them.
Right.
So, there was a lot going on. I love the Watchers on the Wall episode. You know, I thought it was like just.
Yeah,
fantastic.
That was very strong. That was all.
It was all battle. I mean, that was Neil Marshall straight up. You know, I love.
Yeah, and it's like the back half of 13.
Yeah, that's right. I love how they call in Neil Marshall to kind of paratroop in and just direct these badass ones, and then he just leaves until they call him again. You know, it's like the Gimp. They bring him out when they need something. But like that. So giving So my roundabout question is that, like, really spruced up my interest in the wall stuff, the north stuff, and in fact I liked the stuff with Stannis and those other things you saw, you know, the continuation of the wall saga into the finale. That was my favorite stuff. But there were a few threads that I left kind of like, eh, we'll see. You know, I look forward, obviously, to the next season. Can't wait. But a little work needs to be done here and there. But again, I haven't seen the books. I don't know what's coming.
Yeah, I've read all the books, and no, obviously without spoiling anything, I had maybe some different expectations. I knew what they were going to do in a broad strokes, some different expectations about what they might put in as far as some character motivations that were changed that I think kind of made things make less sense in the TV show. And there was also one thing that I think a lot of people have been talking around, and I won't mention it here, but there was something in the epilogue of the third book that I was sure they were going to put in the show. And I think there were reasons why they didn't, and it's not super important to the story, but I was waiting for that moment because I think that would have blown everyone's minds.
Did it have anything to do with a maternal figure?
It did.
Okay, that was inadvertently...
I think it was
spoiled for me at some point. It's okay.
Oh, man.
It's, I mean, and the thing is, they may never...
Right, that's the only thing I had said, right. Yeah.
Because I think that you know, as much as I thought that was going to be like the kicker, there's really no reason for them to have done it. I think it would have turned a lot of people off just because it just would have come out of left field.
Yeah.
And I think there was stuff in this episode that did seem to come out of left field just because they changed, like I said, they changed some of the character motivations about things leading up to the big murder at the end and stuff. I think would have made maybe more sense if they'd stuck to what happened in the books, but I don't know. Anyway, at this point, I've actually just this past week finished the fifth book, so I've read as much as I can, and I wish I could read more, but I can't now. So now I'm in the
same.
I know. Well, I've gotten to the point where you know, I was impatient after watching like the first couple seasons of the show. I want to know what happened, so I just pushed ahead, and now I'm, you know, I'm just waiting like everybody else.
That's right.
Like some schlub.
I found the last episode to be a an entertaining piece of television. I liked the, I guess you can't really call it a twist, but the kicker. I thought it was well done. Some of it felt like I was watching a cutscene from Skyrim.
Or a Ray Harryhausen film, which I enjoyed. I enjoyed that section a lot, actually.
Yeah, it was a good scene.
I do, too, but it was like, well, I already played this game. And so that's not really a cut. It's just sort of a cut on the show. It's just sort of the way it looked was just a little bit it was sort of jarring to see that. I still, on a certain level... And again, I'm looking forward to season five and enjoying it as good entertainment. But part of me just still feels like the show's a little bit cheap. Like they go for giant scene after giant scene and nothing ever seems to breathe. So I guess I'm a little bit less enthusiastic than the rest of you, but it was definitely fun.
Yeah, I mean, I think you can sort of, because it's a TV show, I think you can feel the limitations as big as they go and as, you know, as kind of big in scope as they try to do, and even, you know, in episodes like the Watchers on the Wall, you still kind of feel the focus of it, and like we're going to put our money in these very specific things, and you know, and kind of suggest the larger battle that's going on or the larger forces or whatever it is, while kind of showing a small sliver of what's happening. I think that that's something they kind of have to do because they can't, you know, really pull out all the stops because there's as much money as they pour into that show, they don't have the money to do all that. But I'm very curious to see where they go from here because of where. I think Dave, you kind of touched on it a little bit, and you know, again, without spoiling anything, I mean, the third book ended with, you know, in such a kind of a resolute way and kind of push things and push people in such different directions as we saw in this fourth season, that I'm not sure where they're going to go. I mean, they've already kind of reordered, not reordered, but kind of shaken things up from the books. There was stuff from book five in season four. There's stuff from book four. Yeah. I mean, there's stuff all, they basically just started pulling people in and just sort of making it a bit their own. And they've gotten to the point where with some characters they may even have to start just making stuff up.
Well, that's what I've read too, is because they're going to outpace the books.
And at this stage, I'm fine with that because I don't want to sit around for 3 years without them. So.
Well, and the other thing I think it's really important to adapt a book and not recreate a book. And so if you wind up having to make stuff out of whole cloth, at least that gives somebody, people like you and me, Dave, who haven't read the books, a reason to read them.
I mean, I've decided I am just going with the show.
You might as well. That's a good choice. I mean, the thing is that there's a lot of material that they haven't done. But if they just... I mean, I would be fine with them basically just putting a hold on certain characters and just picking up even a season from now. I think a lot of watchers wouldn't be. A lot of people probably wouldn't be. I think one of the things that hurt the show in season two was that they tried way too much to kind of just cut quickly between storylines and kind of you just felt like you were jumping back and forth between things all the time. It just started to become unwieldy. They found a pretty good balance. But I mean, I really appreciated that episode that took place entirely at the wall because it just, you got to just focus on one thing and let it play out instead of like 10 minutes here, 10 minutes there, 10 minutes here. Cause they got so many characters and so much happening. I'd be perfectly fine with them, you know, bringing in a couple new storylines, from the fourth book or fifth book, and then kind of letting some of the other stuff just kind of lay dormant for a while.
All right.
They're not going to do that, but anyway.
All right. Very good. Anything else, Daryl?
No.
All right, Eric?
I've been keeping up with 24. I don't know if anyone else has.
I'm a couple episodes behind. But I fell behind. I did watch like two or three episodes back, and I liked what I saw, actually, to be honest. So I need to – I don't know what transpires in the next couple, but this was the one. The last one we watched was generic blonde woman who I forgot her name already gets tortured a bit. Whatever that one was.
Oh yeah.
She's. Well, I think
every episode of every 24 seasons.
I think Von Strahovski's been pretty good. I think they've done a decent job of making her more than just generic agent. I mean, I think I bring a certain amount of pre-knowledge to her because I've seen her in other stuff. But I think they've done a decent job of kind of making her kind of comparable to Jack Bauer, kind of make her the other hero of the show.
Yeah, I agree.
I mean, 24, I think, for a long... I mean, it's a show that I will watch from beginning to end and will just never think about again. I mean, it's great fun in the moment, and they do what they do very well, but it's not... It's kind of a disposable show, but I'm glad they brought it back.
All right, I got a little movie review. Mac and I got out to see Edge of Tomorrow, the Tom Cruise movie. I did enjoy it. I thought I would have liked it more, like really loved it, but I really liked it, I guess. And it was well done, and it was, the action was great. It was inventive, and there's some good humor in it, as you would expect with this kind of Groundhog Day scenario that they use. But what I liked about it was like straight up sci-fi too. You know, it was like a true blue sci-fi movie with, all kinds of these. I will say too, the alien invasion. It's good to see an alien invasion movie that's not an embarrassment battleship, right? So it was. So that was good too. So I liked it a lot. I think I thought I would really love it because the word of mouth was excellent. But overall, I think it continues a pretty solid trend of movies I've seen since March or whatever. So I would recommend it for sure. Emily Blunt was new to me though. I was trying to think of what she's been in. Have you guys seen Emily Blunt and other stuff? Like, was this her big break type of movie or what?
Nah, she was in things that at least I've seen. Yeah. She makes an appearance in the first new Muppet movie. She's in like The Devil Wears Prada,
but not big
stuff
roles.
Like that.
I mean, she's not
really. Big roles.
Yeah, I mean, she's good in this. She was definitely good in this. I liked her a lot.
I think if you wanted to talk to her about talk about her big break, it was probably Looper.
Looper, that's true. Right?
Yeah. I forgot she was in that.
Which, I forgot that movie existed until looking at this list. But
right, same here. I looked at it. I can't even remember. Now I remember her character when I think back on it. But definitely this is, I think. So she was good in it. I'd like to see her in more stuff. And she was a good action, like an action hero too, which is always good to see. So. But yeah, Edge of Tomorrow, I'd recommend it. So I don't think it's, I'm not sure if it's doing big numbers, but it's worth a look. So, all right. Let's go right to our, anything we got? Yeah, one thing to talk about coming from the site, so make it a good one. Go ahead, Jason.
Posted earlier this.
You do a bunch of things. I don't care. You do a couple of things.
I'll just do one thing. Earlier this week for the site, I read a review of the. There's a German miniseries that came out last year called Generation War, and a lot of the promo stuff was billing it as the German version of Band of Brothers. I don't know if I'd go that far, but it was really good. I liked it. It follows these five young German people, all very different, through the course of the war. And I guess it was really controversial in Germany when it came out because I don't know if you know about how Germans approach World War II, but they just don't talk
they
about
don't.
It.
They don't. They don't approach it.
And I guess this, for whatever reason, this was the thing that broke that. Like, people started opening up about it after this came out. And, I mean, it's not perfect. The characters are almost too, I won't say victim-y, but, like, all of them are, you know, the product of war. But it's still really good. The characters are sympathetic. And the action scenes are really well done, especially considering that the budget probably was not big for this at all. I'd really recommend it. Check it out if you like World War II stuff.
What was it called again?
Generation War.
Generation War. Yeah, I'll check that out.
Nice. All right, Daryl?
For a review this week, I am doing the sequel, or I'm doing Wolf Creek 2. I don't know if any of you saw the original Wolf Creek from 2005, Australian horror movie, basically in that hostel, Saw kind of vein, but an interesting premise in that it's in the Australian outback, which you rarely see, and it stars John Jarrett as the villain, Mick Taylor, he's extremely charismatic, one of the better horror villains in quite a while. So I'm reviewing the sequel to that. And both are based on true events in that sort of nebulous way, although they kind of embrace it more for Wolf Creek 2, which makes a lot of sense. But the interesting thing about it is that it takes it from being that sort of kind of torture movie to an action thriller, and Dave, you in particular, I think, would enjoy this because there's certain scenes like a semi-truck being driven off of a cliff into a car. And it's actually a pretty spectacular scene, and it's all practical. So they really ran this dang semi off a cliff. It's pretty spectacular little scene, and there's a It sort of, when it's horror, it feels more like Duel or Joyride, like semi-truck versus car kind of thing. And so there's this fantastic little scene where, and this is all CG, of course, or at least I hope so, where the guy is trying to escape from Mick Taylor in his car, and this run of kangaroos starts rolling across the road. And he's trying to avoid them while Mick Taylor is sort of specifically trying to hit them.
Nice.
And so it's this sort of, it's like a minute or two of kangaroos being smashed and going everywhere. And it's pretty fantastic. There's some pretty fantastic stuff in this thing. So it's maybe not great horror, but a pretty interesting sequel. That takes the thing into a new place, and pretty fun.
Nice.
Pretty fun.
All right, good stuff, Eric.
Last week I reviewed second season of Comedy Bang Bang, the IFC talk/sketch show that came from the podcast of the same name. Yeah, it's great. It's really, really funny. I loved the first season when I reviewed it last year, or early. Who knows? Earlier, we'll say. And I love this one, too. They're twice as many episodes, great, 20 episodes this time around, and just a ton of extras. I mean, it's the show is available on Netflix. You can watch the first and second seasons. I think the second half of the second season is coming out soon on Netflix, so you can watch them that way. But the DVDs make such a case for themselves. I mean, I wish everyone you know did stuff like this when the streaming option available. But it's just hours and hours and hours and hours and hours and hours of extras. The whole disc just devoted to bonus scenes and extra stuff and all this. It's kind of insane package. So I really like that. And then this week I'm reviewing the Criterion Collection Blu-ray of A Hard Day's Night, which is the best Beatles movie. A movie that I've seen dozens of times and would happily watch a dozen more. They restored it and remastered it, and it's got great sound, great picture, and just again a ton of extras. So it is a very nice package. I was very excited to get that one, and totally worth picking up.
All right, a bunch of random stuff, but I'll just the big one was 300, Rise of Empire, which I had been looking forward to for a while. I had seen it at the theater, really enjoyed it. I know I'm a cheap date when it comes to this stuff, but I thought it was actually sneaky clever the way they made this, because actually going into it, I had modest expectations, to say the least, but they made it to be like this parallel film that happened at the same time, the original 300. Of course, these are very, very, very loosely based, on the Battle of Salamis and, the Persian-Greco Wars, but they did a good job of just kind of weaving it in with the events of 300. They brought characters in, and it really worked nicely as this kind of companion movie, and the characters were different enough. Eva Green is pretty good, pretty great as a scenery-chewing villain. And the action was great. It was all like, it was on the seas. It was like naval action. So it was loud. It was fun. It was aggressive. And I don't know. I actually enjoyed it. I mean, the dialogue is about as, it's milquetoast as you're going to get with these kinds of things. But it was a treat to watch. And it is a AV marvel. It's just insane.
So the best description I ever heard of the original 300 was somebody calling it 70s van art.
Yeah, that's not bad. Yeah.
And I'm curious, is this also 70s van art?
I guess. I mean, it's similar to the original 300. That's the best I could say. So, so stylistically, it's, the stylist, I mean, Snyder doesn't direct it, but the director essentially does what Snyder would do. So it's just, slow motion. There's like some slow motion. It's hyper stylized, super bloody. All the blood is CGI. Yeah, I think it'd be 70. I think that counts. I just find it infectiously entertaining. And just incredibly loud as well. I mean, wall-shakingly loud. And it just works the subwoofer like crazy. So, just a movie that just grabbed me, and I was pleasantly surprised by. So, if you want to give your rig a workout, at least give this a shot for sure. So, all right. I think we're going to skip past the upcoming release stuff. I don't think there's anything rocking and rolling right now. So, let's just enter the end game, shall we? So, so our ambush topics, this works, and I'm barely conscious to finish this. So I will let Daryl go first. Do it.
All right. So I just talked about Wolf Creek 2 and how it's a different kind of movie than the first one. Not entirely, but different enough to make it a unique experience in itself. So sequels that change the game.
I got to jump in with Gremlins 2, The New Batch.
It's a good choice.
It's very different.
Very different.
Moderately different.
I mean, I was always impressed with the when they I saw it in the theater when they blew out the film and the Gremlins started doing like Hulk Hogan impersonations and stuff.
Yeah, I think Hulk Hogan actually showed up in the theatrical version.
I think that's right.
Get them back.
Oh, that's right. He did. That's right.
Can't imagine how a Gremlin does a Hulk Hogan impression, but.
Yeah, it was all in silhouette, so, you couldn't tell.
That's true.
Okay, my selection is The Giver 2, not The Giver, not MacGyver. So
MacGyver?
Yeah, I wish.
Angus MacGyver?
Angus. Oh, spoiler alert.
Sorry.
So The Giver was a Mark Hamill, he starred in this kind of Japanese anime thing or whatever, but basically Mark Hamill's character turns into this monster fighting guy, and it's very loose and lighthearted and goofy, and he pounds on these rubber-suited monster guys. The Giver 2 goes hardcore dark and gory. Like, it's a complete tonal shift. And so the Guyver here is, like, ripping the throats out of monsters, and torrents of blood are flowing out and completely different tonally. And, by the way, completely awesome. So I believe the writer of the Guyver emailed me after my review and appreciated it and took to heart my criticism that it was too long because the Guyver 2 ran 2+ hours, which is not okay. That is not okay. So, yeah.
Well, this is probably the obvious choice, but it's the one that's jumping out at me, and that's Aliens after Alien.
True.
Goes from a pretty dark horror in space kind of film to straight up James Cameron action.
Yeah, and all four of those, or all three sequels, sort of each changed the game on itself.
Yeah, true.
Sort of the Fincher movie, very typical Fincher movie in Alien 3, and then a movie that I still have a soft spot for in Alien Resurrection is, you know, a Jean Genet art movie.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, I think all three of those would count for that. And so I'm going to go with something. I had a different one, but I'm going to go with this one. So the first three Child Play movies are dumb. There's no good reason why anybody on Earth would ever be scared of Chucky.
True.
Stupid. And then Bride of Chucky comes out. Ronnie Yu turns the thing into a silly, like, I mean, it's still kind of horror, but it's turns it into a silly marriage comedy between two dolls. Chucky and then the other one, whose name I don't remember, but is voiced by Jennifer Tilly. And that's the first time, and that one and then Son of Chucky are both very effective horror comedies. And I actually, for the first time, liked the movies.
Is it Son of Chucky or Seed of Chucky?
It is Seed of Chucky, okay. You're right.
I do have a soft spot for the second one, just because I love the whole fight in the toy factory, where Chucky just gets destroyed. Like, he's what we call getting pwned. He got pwned. So, all right.
I think it's Teddy Ruxpwned.
Yeah. I think my backup would have been this Halloween 3, Season of the Witch.
Oh, yeah, that's very good. Yeah. My original one was the end of Hellraiser 2. Turning the Cenobites into easily killable regular horror monsters rather than the minions of the devil.
How about Hellraiser 6 when they became a breakdancing troupe? Did that bother you at all?
That did not happen.
Ah.
I've seen Hellraiser 6 and that did not happen.
Check my name is Pinhead and I'm here to say...
All right. Eric, go ahead. Who do you
have? All right. Too Many Twists.
Oh, good one. Too many twists.
I'm hoping my answer is obscure enough and no one will take it, but no. I do not have a backup. I'll probably go with Gremlins 2 if someone takes mine.
Right. Well, I'll jump in with a show that none of you have watched. The show Nashville. the second season of that show, which I surprisingly watched of my own free will, every single episode ended with some soap opera-y twist, like, this character got it together with this character has amnesia, this character shot their kid, that kind of thing. So, every episode, twist, too many.
Interesting. Did they just ignore that twist in the next episode, or did they actually play out?
Oh, yeah, they played out with it. Yeah. They ran with it. I mean, they did a good job of handling it, but it was, I think by the end of the season, it was pretty eye-roll worthy.
Well, this isn't my original answer, but you reminded me, but I've never seen a show with as many twists as Vampire Diaries. It's like commercial breaks, there were main characters dying and huge things happening. But my original one was going to be High Tension. It only had one twist, but it was one twist too many. So.
Yeah. I'm going to go similar to, all TV. I'm going to go similar with the entire series of True Blood. Where it's sort of the same thing as what you're talking about, Nashville. It's like every time, every 20, 30 minutes, something new happens that totally changes the game. And it's just stupid. It's just a silly. It's a silly program, and, and I guess that's the whole point of being a silly program is that you can do stuff like that. But at the same time, it's not very interesting.
All right.
All right. Well, mine is a movie, not a TV show, and it's a 1987 horror movie called Return to Horror High.
Mm-hmm.
There's some derelict scene. I'd never seen it. It was on Netflix, and I was just kind of randomly poking around. This is a kind of a weird semi-spoof horror movie about there was this high school where there were these murders that happened that were never solved, and this film crew goes back to the high school to make a movie about it a certain amount of time later, and then the killings start up again. But it's got an early, if not the first, probably an early appearance by George Clooney. He lasts about 5 minutes in the movie. Marsha Brady is in it as one of the cops. It's kind of a weird performance. Alex Rocco is kind of a sleazy producer. There's a bunch of people you recognize, and it's kind of a weird mix of tones. I think it's mostly worth checking out, but when it gets to the last, like, I don't know, 15 minutes, it's just one twist after another that just makes no sense. And I won't spoil them here, but it's just like Yeah, it's crazy. The character you think is the guy is not the guy, and maybe he never existed, and he pulls off the mask, and it's this thing, and then maybe these other people aren't really dead. So I guess I didn't spoil it. But anyway, it's just crazy. It's crazy, just one twist after another, and they just make no sense whatsoever.
That era of horror had a lot of Scooby-Doo moments.
Oh, totally, totally Scooby-Doo stuff.
Lots of them did. I mean, Prom Night did, lots of them did. It's like, pull the mask off, and you damn meddling kids. For finding me out. And, oh, it's just, yeah. I mean, that's not, what is that about? What year did you say that was, 86?
87. I'll go ahead and spoil it. So anyway, so there's this janitor throughout the whole movie, and you think that he's the killer, and he turns out to be the killer.
Yeah.
But the guy that you see and then people interacted with and talked is like some kind of old, like, elderly black janitor, and he pulls off his mask, and it's this whole other character that you've also seen in the movie, pretending to be the janitor. There's never a janitor. You're never there the whole time. And that's just the first twist.
Wow.
But you got to respect that killer for having the guts to go in and be the janitor too. Like that's working two jobs, and you know
it is.
He's pulling himself up by his bootstraps here.
All right, Jason, go ahead.
Believable accents. So actors or actresses who are using an accent that's not their own and is really believable.
I'm actually Australian. Does that count?
That's good.
No? It does.
I'm not an actor, though, so never mind. I won't do that.
Well, I guess the correct answer is Bronson Pinchot and his Meepos accent, right?
Oh, yeah.
I mean, that was as money as I've ever heard one.
I've never heard a better Meepos accent.
Me neither.
Meeposian?
Meeposian, yeah.
Maybe.
Yeah, that's my answer.
I think this probably seemed more believable to me as a kid. But, you know, growing up, watching Who Framed Roger Rabbit, I never knew Bob Hoskins was British. I thought he was, you know, an American fella. I think now, watching Who Framed Roger Rabbit, the accent might stick out a little more. But, yeah, that was a shocker.
Yeah,
I thought he was an American, too, the first time I saw it.
And I don't know because I'm not British, but I will say that in the third season of Arrested Development, where they had Charlize Theron in there as the wee brain.
Yeah.
I know she's South African, but I fully believed that she and Dave Thomas could have believably been British. And Dave Thomas is Canadian, obviously, but so I'll say that.
That's a good one. That's a good one.
Sure.
The one I thought of originally, which made me come up with this topic, was in both the show Buffy and Angel, the actor Alexis Denisov.
Yes, right.
Plays Wesley Wyndham Price, and I thought he was British for years. And then I actually heard him talk normally, and I was like, what?
It was off-putting. Yeah, you're right.
Yeah, I almost, like, I don't want to hear him talk with his normal American accent. I hate it.
That's right. You're right. That's a good one. I would say my bonus one would be, like, any British actor from The Wire.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Oh, yeah, it's true.
Idris Elba in particular.
The main guy.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and, sort of Dominic West, right?
Yeah, Dominic. Yeah.
And my backup, now that I think about it, Nikolai Coster-Waldau, who plays Jaime Lannister in Game of Thrones, does a heck of a British accent for being a Swede or
he does.
A Dane.
I've seen him in, like, his native tongue, you know, one of the – I've watched a review to movie did. And so, yeah, it's an impressive feat for sure.
Well, where is, I have to say, I don't think Peter Dinklage's accent is very good in that show.
Yeah, I agree.
I know it's controversial to criticize Peter Dinklage's performance in Game of Thrones, but it always kind of seems weird to me. Anyway, enough Game of Thrones. I don't know.
Hot take. All right, last one will be pretty simple winner. Goop.
Oh well, I'm gonna go with you can't do this on television. When you say I don't know, and you get green slime on you.
You can't do that. Yeah,
that's the correct answer.
Is that on television?
That's right.
Is it that or this?
It's that.
Yeah, okay, that's what I thought.
I was obsessed with the green slime and how it came down. And if the kids – I literally thought that the kids were forced to be on that show because getting slime looks so
– I know.
I actually thought that we'd get a letter, like a draft letter at some point from a Canadian television station. I had to be on that show because it was just like so like, oh, that's so terrible. I got the slime and where did it come from? And
wherever could it have come
from? How did it – yeah, it's true. The magic, television magic.
I did love that show as a kid, though, I have to say. Loved it.
That's a show you can't make today.
Good Lord.
A lot of child abuse jokes in that one.
All right. Well, Goop, this is hope no one's eating. But Dead Alive, when the woman eats the pudding or whatever it is with the ear and the... I had to say about watching that movie in college while eating ramen, and I'll never make that mistake again.
Oh, yeah, no, that's actually a bad combo.
That was a very bad combo.
It's been a while since I've seen this movie, but I'm pretty sure Ghostbusters 2 has
the pink slime.
The mood slime or whatever.
Yep. Goop everywhere.
Goop everywhere, indeed. All right. I'm going to go with a little movie that I reviewed called Deathbed, The Bed That Eats.
Sure.
Okay, so you, Dave, I read your review of that.
Yeah.
You liked that movie.
I couldn't. I didn't hate it.
I bought that movie when the DVD came out, and I wanted to hit myself.
So I was strangely compelled by it. I'm not going to lie. It was
so bad.
It is so bad. And it was like... I thought it was like, you know, talking about accents. At first I thought it was like a British film, but it was from Detroit, you know?
Yes.
But, God. Oh, man, it was just, you know why? They took it so, the guy who made it just thought he was doing, it felt like he thought he was doing high art, you know?
Oh, I know.
And that's why I was so compelled by it, because it was so stupid, so basically it's a bed possessed by a demon, and it just... People sit on it, they get sucked into the mattress, and the goop comes out. This, like, yellow foam comes out, and then it cuts to an awful full-screen, like, urine. It looks like urine, like, yellow liquid, and these people are swimming through it, and it's like they're getting dissolved, and then edit, and then it's like a biology class skeleton in it, and some guy's hands get dissolved, and he walks around the rest of the movie with skeleton, like plastic skeleton hands, you know? And it's narrated by some doofus who... had consumption, and he died on that bed, and then the bed used its demonic power to trap him behind a painting.
Uh-huh.
This guy, like...
Speaking of Ghostbusters,
that's
too.
That's right.
Well, so he could narrate
he
a movie.
He narrates the movie, and he interacts with the movie. I am just strangely compelled by it. I mean, I was watching it saying, what is this? And it's not like it's even so bad it's good. I mean, the skeleton hands are pretty great. The skeleton hands are pretty so bad it's good. But it's not like it's a so bad it's good movie. No, it's not like... I just was fascinated by this guy, this director, just obviously so in love with his mythology and playing this thing so straight up. And the narrator just talking like this, he's just so far up his butt, you know. I don't know. I don't know, Daryl. I don't know what to tell you.
I mean, I don't know. I understand.
I'll never watch it again. I mean, but I'm not going to give it away. I'm not going to sell it or trade it.
It's the only movie, the director, writer, and producer.
It's the only thing he ever did.
It was, so I bought it when it came out because it had, you know, because I've always been fooled by warnings and big big claims on the front of boxes, you know, yeah. pregnant women should not watch this movie. I want to watch that movie. And it always turns out bad, except for one that we don't need to get into right now.
Thank you.
So I bought it based on the fact that it said that it was this lost movie rediscovered after 30 years. Yeah. And no, this is the prime example of why some movies need to be lost. And I got that thing home, and I was happy, excited to watch it, and it didn't take 15 or 20 minutes before I just plain thought, this is the biggest waste of money I've ever made.
I have seen a lot of... I've sat through a lot of bad horror movies, right? All manner and type. But for some reason, this one, as objectively bad as it was, I could not...
Fair enough. I've seen Hellraiser 6.
The mythology painstakingly created to explain why this deathbed was the bed that... I mean, it's called Deathbed, the bed that eats. And it plays
it
straight.
Yeah, there's no explanation needed.
And it plays it straight, though. That's the you know, it's called Deathbed, the bed that eats, and it is completely a straight shooter. So...
Mm-hmm. It's not a comedy. It's not horror comedy.
It's not a comedy.
Itself.
It's not a B. It doesn't consider itself a B movie. You know,
nah.
It considers itself. I think it considers itself high art.
Yeah,
it's fascinated
just,
by it. And there's goop. That's where the goop comes in. The digestive.
There's a lot of goop. There is a lot of goop.
And some really terrible synth music kicks in to like notify you that the bed is eating now.
Yeah. So I think it started with the title. I mean, deathbed. Some of the deathbed.
Started.
Oh, yeah.
Deathbed, death, bed.
Right.
Bed that eats.
But then they said, "How do we make this as serious a horror movie as possible?"
Okay. Well you start with mythology.
Sense.
So, what would make a bed eat people?
No, the question is, it works off the premise of like. What would drive regular people to go to this abandoned, mildewy estate and make love on a strange bed that's sitting in the dungeon?
Because you want bed bugs.
Okay, sure.
That's the whole... That's
you know,
I
mean, you're at the very best, you're going to walk away from that experience with bed bugs.
That's right. Like, people are drawn to go to this... Lie in this bed that is just there.
It's like a 30-year-old bed that hasn't been washed. And, like, numerous people have... slept together on it, and yet people still arrive.
And a little CSI blacklight thing would pick up all kinds of stuff.
Yeah,
I'm pretty sure that's a particular fetish, isn't it? The abandoned house mildew bed.
I think so. Just
don't type that into Google, okay? I'm saying
AHMB disorder.
Google.
So I don't know. There you go. I can't argue anything you say, Daryl. I think what did I give it? Did I give it a decent score? Maybe.
You gave, if I remember right, you gave acting. You gave the acting a relatively high score and the story a relatively low score, or vice versa.
Oh, that doesn't sound right. Okay,
No, you were generally positive about it. And I was like, what the hell is this?
Yeah, right. I gave acting a 60.
What movie did you watch?
I gave the story an 80. Wow.
Dave, you want to carpool to Deathbed Con this year?
Okay, I think it's time.
I hear the headboard's going to be there signing autographs.
Oh yeah.
Okay, we're going to find out who's right, me or Daryl. I'm going to click on the "Did we give Deathbed the bed that eats a fair trial" link. So when you go to our reviews on DVD Verdict, you can input. So I'm going to say yes, of course. But
yeah,
seven out of seven readers thought our verdict was fair. There you go.
There you go. I mean, you know.
The stats
it doesn't make me wrong, but it makes me unpopular, which is a position that I'm used to. So
a fair review doesn't mean that, people necessarily agree with you, just that you were, fair and even-handed with it. Although I find that people are generally... more positive of a positive review than a negative one.
Yeah, when I tend to get a number of feedback emails telling me that I'm an idiot, and I go to those reviews, they also tend to have that I did not give a fair review. So I tend to think it's people just vote on that based on their particular preferences.
Right.
That's certainly true. Now, I thought I was going to get skewered for not liking Weekend at Bernie's, but I've gotten, you know, I don't think I've gotten any negative reviews for that.
There you go.
So, you know, all I'm saying, Daryl, is you maybe should be a little more fair. I'm saying maybe you should change. That's all I'm saying.
Well,
maybe,
let's be fair about this. I didn't review Deathbed the Bed That Eats DVD for the website. This is just my own personal...
If you had, it'd probably be, you know, nothing but no votes, probably. I mean, cause it sounds like you're going to be unfair to Deathbed the Bed That Eats.
Well, it'd be no votes because nobody reads what I write.
Well, I only got, for my Son of God review, I only got 3 out of 7 thought this was fair, and that includes mine. So that didn't go over well.
Mine too.
Why'd you vote for yourself?
That's the only way you can see the review.
Yeah, I always vote for myself.
That's the only way you can see the feedback.
No, for your own review, you just go to the staff page and look under more, and it shows you all the
sounds like a lot of work. But yeah, I bolster my own credibility. I mean, I guess.
Yeah. I just vote no on all of mine.
Look, all I know is those fair votes reflect on my compensation package, unless you guys did a compensation package. I don't know.
I'm, again, this is probably why I get, you know, so many yes votes, because I'm the fair way. I go right to the staff page. I look at it there. I don't skew the results. You know, I'm not skewing the results.
So the readers somehow know this about
all the readers.
They do.
They do now. They do. I know.
Personally, I'm just incredibly narcissistic and have to vote myself yes because I know that I'm fair.
Yeah, so you are fair. So, interesting.
Of course I'm fair. And my review of
I didn't realize I was surrounded by such integrity. which brings me to ask this question, Eric. How are you watching Game of Thrones? How do you watch Game of Thrones?
All I'm saying is that I go to the stats. And go to the stats. And it's right there. All the reviews you've ever written are right there.
Yes, you are correct.
Of course they are. I wouldn't have written them if they weren't there.
If you wanted to know,
I got a little scrolling to do. That's all I'm telling you. Okay.
Yeah, I'm saying if I want to know what people thought of my Sarah Palin's Alaska review, I look at it there, and I got, you know, 3 yes votes, 2 no votes. That's pretty good for that kind of review. You know, that's pretty good.
I just want to know what I thought about my review, and I think it's
the only way you do that.
Well, okay, in that case, you have to vote.
There's no other mechanism to vote. You can find that out. You're right. There's zero.
Because if you don't vote, you can't complain.
You don't know. You don't know how you felt about it until you vote.
So
I mean, that's
here's a question to you guys before we wrap this up. So looking at the stats page that Eric has kindly pointed us towards, do you what is your overall stats, your yeses and nos? Can you see that? Can you access that right now and tell the world?
I got it right here.
So do you want in numbers or percentage?
Let's see. Well, just give me your – how many yes votes do you have?
Okay. I have 5,065 yes votes and 931 no votes.
Oh, that's not a bad – that's not bad.
Yeah, it's pretty good.
All right.
So that's about – yeah, I mean, that's working about 80%,
that's
a little higher than 80%.
That's impressive. Jason, you got that in front of you?
Yeah, I do. Yes votes, I have 603, and no, 41.
That's pretty good. Only 41 people are jerks.
That's not bad. Yeah.
Well, I'm the new guy, though, so I mean, give me a couple years, and those will rock it up, I'm sure.
Eric, what do you got?
I got 3,015 yes votes and 414 no votes.
That's pretty good. That's about. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's probably an even higher percentage than I have.
Yeah,
I don't know how to figure out percentages.
Me neither. That involves fractions and whatnot.
How do you do that?
That sounds like closer to 90%. I mean, it might be rough math in my head, but that sounds closer to 85-90%.
I don't think
so. Good on you, Eric.
I don't think mine's good. Then yes votes 12,837. No 4,628.
That's about 75.
Is it? Are you sure?
Yeah, that's about 75%.
How do I know that you do it? I can't. I got a calculator
here.
That
doesn't sound great.
I can't figure it out. Yeah, wait, what is it again?
No, you're right. You're right, Daryl. You're right. It's 75%. You're right.
Yeah, it's right around. So, I mean, that's.
How did you figure that out?
I just added the 4 to the 16 and then divided the 4.
Yeah, I mean.
So to speak. So, and your scoring tendencies, as far as judgment, technical scores, and film quality scores, where are you on your scoring tendencies?
They're all average.
Me too.
Yeah, same here.
All right. Okay. High for judgment, high for film quality, average for technical. Okay. So, I mean, I pander, basically.
You're a giver. You're a giver.
Yes, I am. I mean, I'm very positive about it. Then again, you know, I don't review as much crap as you do, Dave. So
you carefully request things.
I tend, you know, sure. Sure, I reviewed Marmaduke, but I also reviewed Hard Day's Night. So it's all...
How about your most popular reviews? A review that's in there that you're embarrassed that is in there. How about that? Yeah.
Oh, my number one review is king of all of that. I have 12,539 hits on Blood and Sex Nightmare, a terrible movie that I still remember for its terribleness that I reviewed on July 11th, 2008, which coincidentally I probably received on my birthday, so happy birthday to me. What the interesting thing about this wasn't just that it's my most popular review and 22 out of 23 people believe it's fair.
Yeah.
it's that you can see on the staff page yesterday's referrals.
Oh, yeah.
And
you're still getting some hits?
I still get hits. I got 7 yesterday. But what was really interesting about it was seeing how people got to this review.
That's always fun. Right?
And I have no interest in telling you the disgusting things that people searched for on Google to wind up on Blood and Sex Nightmare. And that's I think true. You can probably imagine yourself, but you see the actual Google searches that they're making, and it's like, wow. Wow.
This so basically, is basically,
very weird.
People should be ashamed of yourselves.
People should be ashamed. I should be ashamed of myself for having reviewed it. But the question I have is why they clicked on the DVD Verdict link as opposed to the link that probably got them closer to where they needed to be.
Probably they, you know, their boss came by just at that moment.
Oh, crap. I got I'm just reading DVD reviews.
That's all. The real thing we learned is Daryl Loomis's audience should not be walking free on the streets.
Maybe nor should the reviewer, but, you know, whatever. I've never been caught.
All right. Okay, new guy, what do you got? Anything most popular review that you're ashamed of right now?
I was actually just thinking about this today, too. Medea Gets a Job, the play. No matter what, it just keeps rising. And I wrote it over a year ago, I think, too. And it gets like 10 hits a day, steady, you know, steadily 10 hits a day, 10 hits a day. And I just want it to drop off, but it doesn't. It keeps going up.
Wow.
And yeah, I say any press is good press, you know.
That's right.
Oh yeah,
bring them in, you know.
Quicks are quicks.
It's true.
How about you, Eric?
I'm ashamed of anything. I mean, I think I'm shocked that Barbie, a fashion fairy tale, is number 5 on my list.
Not bad.
That's pretty good. I mean, the number 1 for me is Scott Pilgrim still. So that
hey, there we go.
Can't be ashamed of that. So.
Yeah, a lot of the stuff that you were like. For me, it's like Battlestar Galactica, some Lord of the Rings stuff. She-Ra, Princess of Power Season 2, comes in at 5 overall for me. But I would say Komodo versus Cobra is in my top 10. That's a 20,000 hitter for some reason. I'm trying to think why.
Is this a sci-fi movie?
Yeah, KVC, even. That's what it's called, because it's Komodo versus Cobra. from 8 years ago. In fact, nothing new, like. I don't think I've grown as a writer because nothing new is in this. These are all old stuff.
you know, and when I look at my list, I think it's 20 of my most popular reviews. I'm basically ashamed of most of them. as it all turns out, there's a few good ones. I got Sherlock Season 1 on there. Lost Highways, good. I'm a big fan of. Thin Red Line's a good movie. But then there's like sleazy sci-fi of the 70s, 42nd Street Pete's 8mm Madness, Volume 7, Busty Stars of the Stags.
yikes.
You know, I'm not sure if this is true, but I would imagine that sex sells.
I think that's what's really coming clear. The funny thing about the 42nd Street Pete movie is that I actually received that movie the same day. Or basically at the same time, the mail came at the same time that my parents showed up to visit me.
Nice.
So, hey, Mom, look what I have to review this week. And basically threw it at her. You know, I'm a classy dude.
You are classy. Boy. I tell you, no one liked my Battle Beyond the Stars review, whatever that is. I can't remember it, but yeah. 26 no votes to 4 yes.
See, now
it's not a fair
now
review, my friend.
No.
Now I wonder what my most no votes are. I think it might be my Eureka Season 1 review.
Oh, yeah?
What was that? That's pretty bad.
Did you give it a negative review?
I did. I have six yes votes and 15 no votes on that one.
Oh, wow. Well, I agree.
Yeah, I didn't like it at all. People seem to like that show.
Yeah, my most negative was for the Michael Bay movie Pain and Gain. I gave it a middling grade, and I've only got 9 on it, but that's still like...
9 no's?
Yeah, 9 no's, but that's the most bad. I have on a single movie.
Pretty good.
Yeah, something to sneeze at. But I bonded with my Airwolf brethren. I got like 33-0. Yes.
That's nice.
That's right.
Yeah. It's fun.
It is
fun.
You
know, there's a stats. I love the stats page, you know.
I won't take away.
This is how I relive my glory days.
I have to admit, I check it every day.
Scott Pilgrim review. Is that
It's good. Apparently, my review of The Sandlot did not do very well for either. No. 5 yes, 11 no's on that one.
You're underwater. Yeah. That's what we call it.
I think my most disliked review. It's the percentage isn't there, but it's the review that it's also on my top 20. It's the review that I've gotten the most flack about over the years is a really disturbingly irresponsible movie called Megan Is Missing, about online predators. It's really irresponsible, and pretty disgusting, but it's 25 yes to 34 no. So I'm pretty sure that's the most no votes I've ever gotten.
That's a unsettling number of cumulative votes.
Yeah.
That's a minimum of people who've read that review.
That means people are actually watching this movie.
Yeah,
and
that's
the most
unsettling part about it.
It's really irresponsible, and I actually got an email from a mother of 2 daughters, 10 and 12, who said that not only was I an idiot, but that she was determined to show her children this movie to warn them against online predators. And the things, though, that especially the 10-year-old, the things they'll see, boy, I didn't even see that kind of stuff when I was 10. So really irresponsible, apparently really popular because it's my number 3 review.
Wow. Okay.
Interesting.
All right. Well, we can scroll through these all day, I suppose.
That was fun.
I think our last listeners checked out about 20 minutes ago. But
that's okay. We're very self-indulgent.
Just closing down the bar.
That's
you know?
True. That's right.
Last call for reviews. You don't have to stay home. Go home. Drunk on power.
All right. That is it. Thank you for listening. Everybody have a good weekend. See you later.